Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, where we feature the Palestinian narrative, the Palestinian voice that is too often missing in the presentation of news and analysis in the American mainstream media. This is John Roberts. This morning we feature two human rights giants from Palestine, each of whom has a long record of resistance to the Israeli occupation going back to their youth, which, of course, translates into being considered terrorists by the Israeli government. And as a result of that resistance, they have arrest, detention, and prison records, as do virtually all resistors to the occupation, which means obtaining visas to travel is very difficult and sometimes impossible. But this time they were able to get the necessary documents to come to the United States, and we are most fortunate to have them on This Week in Palestine. Raji Sorani lives in Gaza and is the founder and director of Palestine Center for Human Rights. Shawan Jabarin lives in Ramallah and is director of Al-Haq, the oldest and best-known human rights organization in the West Bank and a member of the advisory committee of Human Rights Watch. The presentations you will hear this morning were recorded at an event at the JFK School of Government at Harvard University. Here is Raji Sorani from Gaza, followed by Shawan Jabarin from Ramallah.
Thank you, Sarah. It's great to be in Boston, great to be at Harvard, and especially at the Kennedy School of Administration, and with all the new friends. I mean, we knew for a quite long period of time. 22 years ago, Oslo Accords were signed, and I'm not personally a big fan of it. But it intended to be A and B, A, confidence-building measure between the two parties, Israel and Palestine. Second, to conclude the Palestinian state in May 4th, 1999. So this was, I mean, the wish, and since then, we decided to work as a human rights activist in simple two agendas. A, to work on the occupation agenda as if Palestinian Authority doesn't exist, and due to simple fact that the occupation will continue in its legal, physical form for the transitional period. Second, we will work on Palestinian Authority, national authority, as if the occupation doesn't exist, awareing about the area of jurisdiction, the power it enjoyed, no sovereignty, but we wanted to seize unique opportunity for a state in a process and try to lay down paces, solid paces, for rule of law, democracy, and the human rights within the authority. So then when the Palestinian state comes, there will be the real paces, I mean, for that. We don't begin from scratch or zero level. Very unfortunately, shortly after that, that Rabin was assassinated, definitely not by Palestinian. And after that, President Arafat was killed, and definitely not by Palestinian. The fact that we are having, after 22 years, in Gaza and occupied territories at large, three major basic things. A, we are having in Gaza siege, illegal, inhuman, criminal, sort of persecution and crime against humanity, suffocated Gaza socially, economically, and otherwise. And Israel didn't satisfy with that. They launched in 6 years only, three offensive. It's not offensive against resistance groups, but civilians were in the eye of the storm, and civilian targets were the real victims. Maybe Gazans deserve that, they are supporting Hamas and Hamas exists in Gaza. But what about Jerusalem and the West Bank? They have fantastic partner, our president, President Abbas. They praised him, welcomed him, and they said he is fantastic and he can be a real partner of peace. But Jerusalem, subjugated to unprecedented level of ethnic cleansing for Palestinians, Muslims, Christians, Judaization, using all administrative, practical, legal ways, means, and the fait accompli policy, and imposing that, curtailing, enclaving in Jerusalem with quite a lot of settlements, which it changed not only the demographic structure, but the geographical structure of Jerusalem. West Bank, in simple words, we can say the settlements policy, expanding settlements, existing settlements, vertically, horizontally, new settlements, are built bypass roads connecting these settlements with Israel directly, with roads only used by settler Jews, and with the roads enclaving Palestinian villages, camps, and cities, enabling them in no way to expand or having any leverage. It's vice versa. Incursions on daily basis to the Palestinian cities, villages, camps, killing, destroying, and arresting a lot of them, and we so far having 7,000 plus Palestinian prisoners, among them many parliamentarians, tens of parliamentarians who are subject to administrative detention, and all these prisoners systematically subjugated to torture, which is legal in Israel. Israel destroy houses, kill youngs, saying we do that legitimately as U.S. defending its citizen, or U.K. defending its citizen, or all civilized world defending their own citizens, forgetting one simple fact that we have criminal belligerent occupation lasting for the last 50 years almost. Next year it will be 50 years, half century. In simple words, what we are having in the West Bank, a new brand of apartheid. Our South African counterparts, when they come and visit, they say, we have the apartheid, this is not something we read in books. But yours are more savage, more brutal, more bloody. So we are talking about unique and the new brand of apartheid in 21st century. Gaza, due to the siege, paralyzed the social economical life. More than 65% unpaid or employed, 90% under poverty line, and 85% received their rations from UNRWA, World Food Program, other resources. So in simple words, this Gaza, which has one of the highest percent of university graduates on the world and no illiteracy, and having very skilled working class, and having very strong business community, which has enough money, don't need any donors to pay one penny, suffocated completely, and shifted to be a nation of beggars. This is the biggest man-made disaster Now, last offensive in summer 2014, we are not the groups, human rights groups, defending resistance groups. Whether it's Fatah, Hamas, or Jihad, or PFLP, left or right, or religious, we are defending, I mean, simply the Palestinian citizens, the Palestinian civilians, who are in the eye of the storm. But 7 years were not enough. I mean, for Israel to impose the closure, but more tranche, 3 war, and not to rebuild Gaza in 2 of them, and the third came in 2014, and they were doing the following. They targeted our twin towers in Gaza, the most beautiful high buildings. Al-Basha building, Zafar building, and the Italian building. Knocked them down to the earth. Same thing as had happened here. For no legitimate reason whatsoever. They erased entire areas. Shija'iyya, Beit Hanun, Izzanna, Khan Yunis, using what's called Dahya Doctrine and Hannibal Doctrine. 89 family has been deleted. Deleted because bombs with 985 kilos or 2 tons dropped on them. So Najjar family 29 vanished. Young, old children sitting at the Ramadan at the time of iftar just wanted to have their bread and vanished. Hello family, 17 members vanished. Batish family vanished. Maybe death was mercy for those. But those who left from the family are suffering more. No safe haven in Gaza. 365 square kilometers, 2 million people, the most dense populated area on earth, used all kinds of arms you can think of. F-16s, Apache, drones, gunboats, tanks, artillery, land-to-land missiles. No one in the 2 million, including myself, my family, thought next morning will come, he or she would be alive. None of us. 51 days ongoing, just in simple words like that. 570,000 people became displaced. Their houses has been destroyed in different areas, whether in the north or east of Gaza, and they fled their places. They were threatened if they would stay, they would be killed. They were threatened not in words, not by messages, not by telephone, but the bombs and the killing and the destruction. The death coming from the sky was the message for them. The Israelis played on the psychology. They were asking 42% of the Gaza population to move from one area to another. And when they were moving, the areas they moved to, suggested by Israel, is bombed again. UNRWA helped these people in having their schools as shelters. And even these shelters were subject to bombing. Whether they are sleeping day, night. And you will find tens of women, children, elderly, parts and pieces. Even with UNRWA giving the GPS locations of all these schools more than one time, it has already hit them with no mercy. Hospitals, even operation theaters, were not exception on the rule. Ambulances with nurses, doctors, and injured people targeted and killed. Even at the time of ceasefire, when people thought they can have some breath, like the poor Bakr family and went to the beach, the four children, in front of the journalist who wanted to catch their breath and having a meal on the nice area of Gaza on the beach, they saw them, how they killed them like birds with no mercy. They knew them, they knew they were playing soccer, and they bombed them. It's endless, you know, stories, and it's endless crimes we can go and talk about. This is carried by the most ethical army on earth. It's the Israeli army. The Attorney General, the military Attorney General of Israel, Mag, gave before and during the war and after the war statements to the press. He said, no worries. All the basket of targets which has been designated by the Israeli army to hit has been approved by our legal advisors, and it's all legitimate. And he's the same one. We submit our complaints as human rights organizations and lawyers represent victims for him to investigate and to hold accountable those who committed these war crimes. The only power station in Gaza has been targeted and bombed. Even sewage system, can you imagine this pose a threat on the strongest fourth army on the Middle East and in the world, and the strongest in the Middle East? And according to that, you know, our sewage just go and pollute completely the only place where people can think of having some oxygen. Now, we are romantic revolutionaries, and we believe in rule of law, the human rights. We think this is not something only, you know, Harvard School of Law teaching it, or Columbia University. No, I mean, it's for the victims to have it on their skins. All the way long, we were warning. No contradiction between rule of law, democracy, and human rights, and peace and security. But the American diplomats and the Europeans were having different idea. No. We have to compromise rule of law, democracy, and human rights for the sake of peace and security. This is the result. Organized, systematic war crimes against Palestinian civilians and civilian targets. The harvest is Israel feel just having the upper hand free hand, no accountability, no criticism. They can get along with anything they want, even if these crimes, as it had happened, broadcasted live on air at the real time. And the whole world saw that. Now, Israeli legal system provided all the way long full legal cover for these organized systematic crimes. And when we go even about Gaza siege, which the ICRC, the Red Cross, says this siege illegal, inhuman, consists collective punishment and should be lifted completely and imminently, supported by all international human rights organizations, including the Israeli human rights organizations. The answer will come from the Israeli High Court of Justice and saying, nobody should be worried about famine in Gaza. We are monitoring the situation and we know how many calories each Gazan takes. Before anything happens, we will intervene. If this is not racism, what we call it? I'm not talking about crazy general or colonel, you know, who's doing war crimes. No. You are talking about Israeli High Court of Justice legitimizing the siege, legitimizing extrajudicial killing, legitimizing the termination of families, legitimizing all these horrible acts carried day after day. And when we decide to go and seek justice on the universal level, and we go and have universal jurisdiction cases in London against Doron Mog or Tzibi Livni, or when we go to Madrid and they give us court decisions out of the blue, you will say public. Foreign minister coming up after the court of law in respected European countries, not in Ouagadougou, in London and Madrid. Sorry, we apologize and we promise to change the law, and these decisions are not going to be implemented. So that means you are complicit, you are endorsing, you are partner, you are indulging the rule of jungle at that part of the world. You are giving legal cover once and again for criminals wanted according to the standards of your own countries. Then we say we have to resort to the ICC. Oh, what a crime we are doing. Then we are described as people who are doing lawfare, misusing law, misusing international law, and misusing the victims as well. We are trying to deform the image of this fantastic army and this fantastic state, which is the oasis of democracy in the Middle East. And we have to stop that, and pressure amounted not by groups here and there, but by states on the Israel, on the Palestinian Authority, not to sign or ratify Rome status. And when PA sign and we begin to engage and deal with, Shawa and Jabbarin have the threat of death and his staff. How dare you make submissions to the ICC? So direct threats, dead roses, etc. goes. even mothers and fathers of lawyers working on these cases, not that themselves are threatened. Now, having said that, as Sarah knows, for the last 35 years or so, legal documenting, or these were crimes and crimes against humanity, and putting it in first-class legal file in cooperation with some fantastic international lawyers who are helping us, I mean, doing this over the course of years. In the Israeli legal system, we achieve zero results. With universal jurisdiction, we achieve zero level results. And the facts on the ground are so ugly. So, should we give up? Should we stop doing that? Should we tell the Samoni family, Daya family, Batish family, when they come to our offices, well, listen, folks, in this world, there is no justice. There is the rule of jungle. We are lawyers. We are human rights activists. We believed in justice. We tried over the course of years, but this is the result. This world has no justice for you. And we think what's happening, this is the rule of jungle. And these are Bin Laden rules, these are ISIS rules, and this is the West rules. If you deal with a place like Gaza, and I'm just giving as example, siege with all these disastrous consequences, three wars in 6 years with all the level of death and destruction, if you disconnect people from the outside world, if you don't allow people to move in and out, to study, to work, to be treated, whatever, if this level of unemployment and poverty comes, if you lose hope in law, in justice, in tomorrow, is that what the Americans want? This is the environment, the idealistic environment for Bin Laden. Chapeau for Hamas, we don't have it. Yet. Who can guarantee what might happen in the future? No one guarantees. But is that what the Americans want? Definitely, this is what Israel wants. They want more extremism. They want more militants. They want people to give up hope. They want the rule of jungle and people, you know, do anything, I mean, they can. And then they will have more excuses to attack, to kill, and destroy. But is that really, I mean, what's wanted? We think we have no right to give up. We want at that part of the world simply rule of law. We want at that part of the world for victims justice, dignity. If I cannot treat my water and my sewage, if even I cannot control this, what can I do more? So, in simple words, we will not give up, and we have no right to give up. We will not lose our strategical optimism as well. Hard times pushes either or, to give up or to stand for a challenge. We are standing for a challenge. We know we are defending just, fair, right cause. We know more. We know we are in the right side of history. And we know one day we shall overcome. We are the stones of the valley. We have been there since ever, and we will continue there forever. Thank you.
It's a great honor to be with you tonight, today. And I was in this city in 1990 when I received my award, Reebok Award. And at that time, the Senator John Kerry, he was here and in the ceremony, and he gave us the award. Today he is in his position. We met him at that time as a senator. Today, I think no one from the State Department want to meet with us. That's it's hard after to speak after Raji when he covered all of these things, but I would like to try my best. One, I would like to encourage you all to go and to visit and to see things directly on the ground. We are ready to take care of you if you come. We have a program to take officials, parliamentarians, civil society, academics, to show them the reality on the ground. And we are ready to take that for you too. Welcome anytime. I encourage you all really to come. Anything we will address to you, it will not be more than 1% of the reality on the ground. That's the case now in Palestine. Another thing is, I don't think any of us here or anyone else feels that can make a peace without justice. And I don't think there is any security also without justice. Justice is the cornerstone, you know, in any step you want to move forward. But Israel, I think they have one strategy only, is force and force and force. That's. It's clear. Even it's clear from the evidence on the ground, the policy, the practices, what they are carrying out every day. I ask myself many times, I put myself in their position and look at the situation. Really, this is what I do every day. Like that. When I look at them, you know, just demolishing houses of the families for punitive reasons, official policy. They kill the son of the family. They refuse to return the body. They keep the body weeks, months. Now, still, there are bodies from Jerusalem, more than 4 months in their hands, and they refused, and they make a deal. They make a deal with the families to give them back the bodies. One of the deal is not to make an autopsy. What's this? One of the deal is to bury them after midnight with 20 people maximum, 20 participants in the funeral maximum. And if they breach these conditions, or mainly the condition of burying after midnight with the 20, they have to pay around $6,500, $20,000 shekels. This is the fine. And in the same time, they come and they demolish their house and send them to the street as a homeless. What's security in this policy? When you send the people as a homeless, they have nothing to lose after they lost their son, their daughter, the house. I'm sure this is a very ideal environment to commit anything. to do anything. It's exactly against the security, 100%. I used to address this question to myself. What they will gain exactly from all of these things? But at the end, I concluded with one answer. There is a long-term plan behind that. There is politics behind that. The long-term plan is to push Palestinians outside of their country. A message to all Palestinians to say that you have no future. You have no safe life in this area. If you want to have a future, you have to look for it outside. Maybe I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, let them just address this issue to tell me exactly what they will gain from all of these things. Some of them, they said, this is like a preventive measure for prevention, you know. And it works. Today, yesterday, I heard one of the Israeli military officers, he said it works. But I know that when the 15 years old, 16 years old, 20 years old want to do something, they don't take care and they don't take anything in their mind, the house, the family, things like that. They decide, they react. They are not making, let me say, just addressing questions like that to themselves. And they, Israeli themselves, long time ago, they said also, and they concluded, that this policy doesn't work. But today, they intensified this policy in Jerusalem. And why in Jerusalem? Because the policy is clear. They are taking, you know, different, you know, actions, different policies in the same place. One, administrative policy. Family unification, they push Palestinians, they separated between the family members. They are targeting the family unity, mainly in Jerusalem, because they want to push the Palestinians outside of the city. They don't let them to build freely. When they apply for license, building license, they refused and they reject. And if they give them, it cost them more than $100,000 just for the license. It's a very, very expensive. This is the case in Jerusalem because they are targeting Jerusalem. That's the case. They try to make the life of Palestinians in Jerusalem impossible just to push them outside. Because of that, yes, they pushed them outside. Now, if you go between Ramallah and Jerusalem, there is a place called Kufr Aqab and Semiramis. In that area, officially that area, it's part of Jerusalem municipality border. But the Israeli, they close their eyes. And it's behind the wall. Just keep that in your mind. It's behind the wall. And now the Palestinians in Jerusalem, they feel that, okay, this part, it's part of the municipality. We will save and we will keep our ID with us, which called permanent residency with us. They don't deal with the Palestinians that this is their city. No, they deal with them as a residence. It's okay. And the element, the basis of the residence or residency status is the life center, you know, center of your life, where you stay. If you don't live there continuously and approve that by, for instance, taxes, by school certificates for your children, it means that you are not staying here and this is not your center. And here they revocate your residency. This is another way. And because of that, now many of the Palestinians, thousands, from inside the city, they left just to build outside. And the most poorest Palestinians, they are living in Jerusalem these days. The highest percentage of the young, you know, Palestinians, the young students, they left their schools, is in Jerusalem. They are targeting even children in Jerusalem. They separated them from their families. Now we have tens of them, just 12 years old, 10 years old. They are separated them and they send them to the other part of the city, let me say to the northern side. Just why? For security reasons, because they are throwing stones on settlers. Yeah, I'm speaking facts, what's going on, just to show that there is a policy behind. This is what gives the answer why they are demolishing houses, not for security reasons, for political reasons. Why they are targeting the family unity. And now tens of thousands of families in West Bank separated. West Bank and Gaza separated. That's since 67 until 91, 120,000 Palestinians, they lost their IDs. They left to study outside. They left to work outside. And they couldn't come back. Just you can imagine from 67 until 90, you speak about two generations. And I'm sure that each one of them, here or here, you know, they got married and now they have families. And you, if you can make a calculation, you speak about 700,000 Palestinians. They lost their residency there. And they lost their right to come back. This is just simple calculation. You know how they pushed Palestinians. Because they used to change the military order every 6 months, every year, things like that. If you stay outside without renewing your permit, you know, you lose your residency. And let me say in 6 months or something like that. They use also to make a calculation to say, if a mom, she has the ID and the father hasn't, for instance, they have no right to register their children. And they did that according to their calculation. Who's more, females or males? They have, you know, IDs and residency. That's, according that, they make the change all the time. They used to change, you know, the military order and setting in new orders. This is just, it gives an idea. The economic means, administrative means, physical means, and I mean by physical means like restrictions of the movement. It's impossible for any Palestinians from other parts of West Bank to get in Jerusalem. It's like impossible. I had a case before the Israeli High Court when they imposed travel ban on me. And I received from the High Court, you know, a specific date just to discuss my case. And my lawyer, he is an Israeli lawyer. His name is, maybe you know him, Michal Sfart. He is a well-known lawyer. He submitted, you know, an application for me to get a permit to go just for my case. And they refused. What's the security? What's the security, for instance, if they don't let a mom, she is 80 years old, to go to visit her son in Israeli prisons under the security? And this is what they tell the ICRC when they're coordinating for the family visits of the Palestinian prisoners. What's the security behind, for instance, not to let a mom to go to join her daughter? And I'm here speaking about cases. I'm not speaking about just theoretical things from my mind. No. We documented all of these cases. Just to join her daughter or her son at the hospital in Jerusalem, he or she is sick with the cancer. And some of them, they were died. And their moms and fathers, they were away. And I'm here speaking about 14, 15, 16 years old boy, you know. This is the case. What's the security behind just to go with your beloved, you know, to the hospital, to join them, to be with them? I think This is the life, this is the daily life of Palestinians under the occupation. Occupation is a controlling system, controlling every aspect in your life. What I spoke about and what I'm speaking about now, it's the scene. And we, all of us, we see that by our eyes and we feel it. But there are many things unseen. I think the purpose is to destruct the Palestinian community. That's to construct the structure of the Palestinian community. How? Many things, for instance. Today, anyone from Ramallah or Hebron or other cities in West Bank, when they think to get married or love with other one, his or her partner from Jerusalem, they have to address themselves 1,000 questions. If the Israeli will let them to stay together or not. Because if he or she is from Jerusalem, the other part, they can't stay in Jerusalem. And if he or she wants to join him in the other city, she or he will lose the residency. This is now the case. And it's applied only on Palestinians. What you can call these things, these policies and these practices, I will leave that for you to find the right definition. I will not go, you know, in legal discussion what it means, all of these things. Gaza, when they impose, Raji, he spoke about, you know, many different things going on and happening in Gaza. But now just you can imagine a whole generation now, mainly young generation in Gaza. Those they were 15 years old in 2006. Today they are 25 years old. And the 20, 22, 23, this is the age of the values of the work to learn that and to practice work. Now they don't work. They lay down and they sleep until 1 o'clock, you know, noon, afternoon, things like that. Years by years, years. This is, I think, a systematic destruction for a long term of our society. Even if they leave tomorrow, the siege, I think they destruct already, you know, our society and the new generation. This is an issue. Another thing, when you close all of these things, now the young generation in Gaza, they are looking for their future under the ground. And at the same time, they say, tunnels. You close everything before them. They will look for their own ways to get out of this situation. They will go through the tunnels. Here, there, they will be creative. If you have nothing to lose, you are ready to do everything. That's the case. And the Israelis, they have one strategy, is just more force, more killing, more suffering. This is the empty circle. And all of these things happening under the eyes of the international community. These things happen with the support, unconditional support, by the U.S. mainly, by the U.S. administration. It's happened, and they support them, not financially, economically, politically, but also they don't let the peaceful mechanisms, the legal mechanisms, to be function when they use a veto in the Security Council. The question is, from one side, you don't want us to use all legal means, all peaceful means, all legitimate means. What do you want us to use? Exactly, what do you want to use? And if the U.S. administration are friends of Israel, I like really to speak to the friends of Israel. My message here, it's not for to those they know and they visited and they are sympathetic with the... No. I would like to convey my message to the conscience, to the human conscience of the friends of Israel. Could you please come? Could you please just be, you know, rationalized and put all of these things together, and we are ready to accept their judgment at the end, but not to be blind. That's the case. Go and study what's going on there. If you have a friend, you have to tell your friend, this is wrong and this is right. But not to encourage your friend to go and to continue in the wrong way. And this is what's going on these days. For instance, with respect to Mrs. Clinton, but when she said that she understood if that 2,000 or 4,000 of Palestinians, they are killed in Gaza, she understands that. And Israel has a right to defense. Do the Palestinians, they attack Israel? Or the Israelis, they came and they confiscate and they occupied the territory and they don't want to leave for them anything? That's the case. What's about the self-determination principle? This is an American, you know, title called self-determination. At that time, the Americans, they stood strongly behind this principle in human rights documents. They were stood strongly behind where they are today from this principle. Do Palestinians, they have no right to enjoy and to exercise their self-determination? The Palestinians, they made a compromise with themselves first when they accepted the two-state solution. When they accepted 22% of historical Palestine. When they said, we are ready for the two-state solution, they made the compromise with themselves first. What the Israeli wants? One-state solution? We have no problem with that. One democratic state solution? We are with. Two-state solution? We are with. But I think they want one thing. To expel Palestinians outside, to annex the most or everything, 90% of Palestine, and that's the case. And they want like a toy called Palestinian Authority, Palestinian State, things like that, just to deal with the needs, with the daily needs of the Palestinians in that area, because they want to take off from their shoulders the legal responsibility of the protected persons under the occupation. Israel is the occupying power, and they are responsible. According to international law, they are responsible. They are breaching every aspect in international law, all the principles of international law. That's the case. Another thing is, they are benefiting and profiting from their crimes. How? Not just foreign aids, $3.5 billion a year, beside also the military. No, I'm not speaking about that only. What's about the Palestinian natural resources? They are pillaging natural resources. $7 billion a year, direct from the Palestinian natural resources. This occupation is the richest occupation. Because of that, it's not just an ideological things. There is also an economic dimension in this occupation. And the question here is, if they don't pay the price of their crimes, of their actions, they will not rethink, reevaluate, and change. No way. And I mean by the price, political price, diplomatic price, and economic price. That's the case. How? Don't let the criminal benefit from its crime. That's the products of the settlements. Why? It gets in the markets of Europe and different places. The settlers' presence there, it's against the international law principles, against the international humanitarian law, Geneva Convention, transfer civilians. It's a war crime under the Rome Statute. Why we have to let the settlers to enjoy a free visa when they go here and there? And what's about the settlers and settlers leaders? Those they enjoy, you know, two or three different, you know, citizenship. One of them is American citizenship. And they commit crimes. What to do with that? What to do with the corporations, organizations? They enjoy free taxes. And in the same time, you pay taxes, but they don't pay taxes. And in the same time, they transfer money to commit crimes in Palestine by encouraging, you know, expanding the settlements there, by doing all of these things, and in the same time, they enjoy free taxes. How it works like that? I think it's time. This is, you know, when I address myself, I say, it's a time. It's a time for actions. It's not a time for more condemnations, more statements here or there. And this is our message to all the diplomats, politicians we met in the United Nations, the permanent missions for different countries, you know, we met in the last few days. We conveyed this, and all of them, they were stuck with one thing. The common position between all of them was, you know, if the Americans, you know, and if the U.S. administration doesn't move forward, it will be a big problem. And now they are in the election. And we can't. We have to wait. It means that more bloodshed. It means more creating facts on the ground. And now many of diplomats, politicians, they address the question, do you think that the two-state solution is a realistic? Why you ask this? Because you accept what the Israeli doing and what they did? That's the case. I do believe with two things. One, Palestinians will not disappear. Second, a future is for justice. Third, you can't build your presence, your future, on one element called force and power, because this is a changeable thing in history. No one can give Israel a guarantee that they will stay as a superpower in the region forever. No one can give them a guarantee that the U.S. will stay as a superpower forever. And no one can give them a guarantee that they will not have any change in the public opinion, in politics, in everything like that in the future around them. That's the case. If we are real friends, I think we have to address them in a right and straight way. Because of that, now we are using all the legal, legitimate, peaceful means, international law, and they try to block, you know, before us to do that. We will not surrender. We will not give up. And as Raji mentioned and said, that we have no right to give up. Even if they threatened us, if we receive death threats, and even if they kill us directly, we will not give up, because we do believe about justice, and it's not the work in human rights for us, it's not a job. That's the case, and thank you.
You have been listening to Raji Sarani, Director of the Palestine Center for Human Rights, and Shawan Jabarin, Director of Al-Haq, the oldest human rights organization in the West Bank. And that is our program this morning. Thanks for listening, and we hope you will join us again next Sunday when we will feature the courageous Israeli journalist Gideon Levy speaking at Brandeis University. You are tuned to WZBC 90.3 FM, Newton, Massachusetts, and this is John Roberts wishing you a good morning.